expanding, we're not talking about luxury items that people don't need. And the population of the planet is expanding. So not only do we need more medicine, but we need more jobs. By expanding, again, we're talking about, this is a pitfall, we're doing it right, doing it organically, providing jobs, to produce. I see nothing wrong with that. I see that as a plus. Like I said, we're not talking about something that somebody doesn't need or some luxury item, but we're talking about medicine.
But there's so many plants that are threatened that we do need plants, and yet still cannot be cultivated for various reasons. So that it's not as though this is an easy answer. There's a lot of things, snow lotus. Nobody has gotten it to germinate. We just can't do it yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can in the future, but at the moment we can't. Then there's things like fritillaria, which, yes, we can grow it, but it takes 5 years to grow. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of land under cultivation. You have to weed it for 5 years. And the return on that land in a five-year period just isn't enough to make cultivation feasible for a local farmer. And then there's just 100 other, I started a list the other day of reasons that cultivation doesn't work in various areas. So if it works, great. Saussurea lapa, go for it. It's easy, it brings in money, it's wonderful. So if it works, I have no objection to cultivation. I mean, some people do because they think it's lower quality, but I'm not sure I buy that under all circumstances. But there's just so many reasons why cultivation isn't necessarily the answer.
Herbert's had his hand up for a while there in the back, too.
I want to add to this. We very often talk about the narrative of potency.
Yes.
And from our experience, it's somehow even a very egoistic argument. I always want the highest potency. We always want the best quality. I think stabilization is not such a bad thing, because stabilization means you set a level that you want to achieve, and by standardizing something, you don't set for the best level, but for the level that you can achieve. Yeah. And so a lot of those questions, where we go, and we only need the best plants for our thing. Of course, it sounds like a safe pitch, we need the best. But I question this very much. I think we need it in a sustainable way, and also in a way that we really can do it. So some of these stories I hear, we have to go for the collecting plants because of high altitude, this is the best plant. I think this story makes sense for local doctor, for local country. Mm. But if we talk on an international scale or a global scale and then talk, we want the best, I think that's this is some, I have said, for me this has a bad flavor, this argument, because it's with money, of course, you can always get the best. Mm-hmm. And who is then getting the best quality, and who is
obligating
the whole thing, right? Yeah. You put the dollars on the table, and then you get the best thing, and the locals have the best thing, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should combine those arguments.
And that could be changed through time when you select in what you're growing, looking for the potency of plants. So when the average, you might not get something seemingly as strong, but if you cultivate long enough, you can select for strains which still might perform that way in lower altitude. So that could come.
And also, do you need the highest quality if you just want to treat a headache? I mean, it's just a lot of those medicines going to some convenient or well-being activities. So do we need really the best of the best qualities that is highly achievable for just well-being?
Depends on whether you have a child with 105 degree temperature. I understand your point. I mean, ultimately we want what's efficacious, to get too anal about another 2% of one particular compound or whatever, I think that is ridiculous. But it obviously has to be of good quality. It has to be efficacious. And
I'm not against it.
And like I said, I'm using a practical example. If you have a child with a high fever, you don't want the lower quality, you want the best quality. But ultimately, it has to be efficacious. How do we define that?
Yes.
Just to share some of my opinions on this third division, but I would not know how things would work in industrialized nations. But when we talk about third division, we always talk in the context of developing economy, rural community, uplifting, and elevating their poverty. Yeah. And one of the reasons I feel why third division has not taken off, in spite of the impact on resources in the world, it's because of the when we talk about cultivation in rural communities, it's also about resources, because not many of them have the access to resources, both in terms of infrastructure and the land capital, for instance. And also because a lot of surveys where they have had they have found a negative impact of cultivation, because it would then have adverse impact on the livelihood and economy of the collectors. So that's also one of the aspects. And the other aspects in terms of developing economy or rural community is the myth that is associated with cultivation and collection. For instance, if I just give an example, there was a survey in Africa, somewhere in South Africa, for the life of the country collector, which particular place. 65% of the respondent said that they would not cultivate it because it would be diluting the traditional belief that is associated with that particular species. And also cultivation, because it's a protected, very resource-based and arduous task. For instance, in Australia, they've started cultivating research into this wild rice flower because of its potential as an export plant. But they have spent around 15 years just studying it, because when we are talking about wild resources, we are very limited. No baseline data. And so these are some of the and also there is this argument from biodiversity to people that when we are cultivating, we are narrowing the genetic base, and then there's this loss of genetic resources, because eventually we are selecting plants that are high performing. So in my opinion, I think it should be a blend of cultivation, sustainable management, and also the involvement of the stakeholders. For instance, in Africa, we have this case of Prunus africana, and then this devil's claw, where you have the stark contrast between the collectors and then the end, the price being paid to the paid in the market for this particular price. So the ones who are at the collection end and the final product end, there's this stark differences. So there is this disparity, and also I think it should be a blend of everything. So I guess, as somebody mentioned here, there's no silver or magic bullet to do this. Thank you.
That's good.
This is my field at all, but it's just fascinating, because I'm practicing Chinese herbal medicine, and I was wondering, with the question of standardization, what the effect on local tradition in terms of the growing methods and ideas. I mean, the thing I'm thinking of is aconite, fusa, and an article I recently read about the mass production of fusa, and how this has become the bleaching methods and the inappropriate growing times and harvesting times and all these things in order to meet this global demand has resulted in a kind of, you know, more poisonous product and so on, and that the local idea, the traditional ideas about when you grow it, how you harvest it, how you do it. So in order to get the potency for this plant to work as it's deemed or understood to work, it's so connected to the sort of local life of understanding this plant. So how does standardization and mass production enable that?
It seems so contradictory. We're seeing a kind of more less efficacious, more poisonous product on the market, I understand.
Yeah, that's a point that actually, okay, it's a very good point, I think, because we always think that actually, okay, we scale up the industry and then we need some new techniques to do quality control and to do standardization and so on. But like from my research, it's the other way around, actually. It was China that became a member state of the WTO and the HMT. first that now that creative industry that is now putting that strain on a lot of the strain on the whole Italian country.
I see. This is a very important issue in the standardization of the traditional medicine, including Chinese medicine. This is a big issue in China. As Dr. Watanabe mentioned in his keynote speech, traditional medicine is no longer used as a regional medicine system. Along with the globalization, the more and more people are interested in traditional medicine. Even Europe, North America are interested in Asia traditional medicine. So there is a need to develop the standardization for traditional medicine. In China, we have a project called GAP cultivation, good agricultural practice. That means to standardize the cultivation for best quality sourcing material, but only focus on 50 species. Can you imagine they regularly use the 500 to 600 traditional Chinese medicine? If you count other occasional use, so would be 4,700. So the standardization, I think it's a long process. It's a case to case specific.
Yeah, if I could just make one comment, sort of connecting both of these, and Martin and I have both done some work on this. I think part of the issue is, what does quality mean, and who gets to determine it? Because many of these things, like GAP, GMP, in the regulations themselves, there actually technically is some leeway for people to say, oh, well, for us, quality is going to mean this. And the Bhutanese example is interesting because they can do that.
There is an answer from traditional Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The standardization of the traditional Chinese medicine in the ancient times called authentication of the traditional medicine. The right source and species, you know, and then the proper ecological environment and the traditional appropriate process and technology, not to produce the crude drug into Yinpian, we call it prepared drugs,
right,
not to supply market. But now, today, we have not established the quantitatively the index or what we call the measurements for the Didao Yaochai, the Didao, I mean authentication. What is the real meaning of the authentication? Can we quantitatively measure?
Well, and which quantitative system or evaluative system do you use? I mean, this is
now being started. Some medicinal plants have been established. Perhaps you establish the quantitative indicators by using of the modern scientific indicators. For instance, one of the important indicators is called the leading compound of one medicinal plant. This is a very important one, and by using of the fingerprint technology.
So this is actually similar to what it says in Tibetan medicine also. Standardization exists. But that means, I think, what he said is the best method, the best way to keep it like this standardization. But the present problem is that we are not in a good position to access all these medicinal plants which are in the best locations.
Mm.
So we are talking about cultivation and moving. So this means, I think, within these parameters, we have to establish standardization.
One case I can give you a good example. Ginseng is very valuable medicine, very popular in China. Original from Northwest China, Northeast China and Korea, but later on introduced into Chinese Himalaya region, Northwest Vietnam, cultivated there. And the root become very big, like a radish, very high production, but no market. The farmers have to send the fresh root into market, sold as like the vegetable, like radish. Price about like radish. So this
What about the constituents? What about the chemical profile?
Chemical profile is almost the same, you know, but people don't accept it.
But it can be used in
there, you imagine the ginseng is smaller and much.
But if it's the same quality chemical wise, it can be used for extractions.
That's right. Yeah. Herbert's had his hand up for a while back there.
I think one of the questions you raised was about standardization. I think at least how I understand is there's some sort of confusion because I don't mean it on the local level. When we use plants in the local level, let's think about the kg quantities or 100 kgs of quantity. I have nothing to say about this because this is local. But whenever it comes to the global market, about tons of materials, 10 tons or 100 tons of material, then you will see that, especially when the states come in and regulate, there will be some sort of standardization. And sometimes you are not free to do so. In the Western countries, especially when these are medicinal herbs, there's the pharmacopoeia in place which gives the quality, the set of quality, or this GAP rules or the GACQ rules. You are not free to choose them. You're free to participate. Pharmacopoeia is a democratic process. In Europe, you can be part, you can nominate yourself as contributing member for the Pharmacopoeia Commission, and then you can go to this commission, you can member yourself as being member of the GACP. So, in fact, for all of us, a lot of work because we should actually all participate in all those committees and think that they are working for us and that they set good standards. So, we are in this different levels, and the discussion somehow, we talk about the local level, we talk about the state level, so we have to define where are we talking about, otherwise we get a lot of mix-up with what is good or bad. It has to be for every plant and country and demand, we have to specify what we are talking about. And I miss this a bit.
Yeah, I think that I completely agree with that, and I'm not sure where the cutoff point is, and that gets really tricky about where you decide it. But you can't have the local Tibetan doctors meet standardization. I mean, they go out, they collect their own medicines, they make their own, you know, they cannot, and it's actually the same thing in the U.S. You get a lot of your organic herbal producers on very small level. If all of a sudden they have to meet the same, you know, USDA requirements that the big pharmacies are making, they can't. It puts them out of business because it's just too expensive to meet those standardization quality. So we've got the same thing with cultivation and so on. You really have to. You get these big ginseng producers that are producing huge amounts of ginseng. I mean, that's not helping your local economy. I mean, that's helping, you know, some big producers and the sang collectors, you know, the guys who are out hunting sang and need that pocket money. You know, they're not getting anything out of it. So I think we really have to look at the sociology of the whole process as well as, you know, just.
Exactly, and just to link these two things together, I mean, let me quote from the WHO GACP for a moment. Yeah. They say, like the production sites, you could go on and on. Roadways and areas used by wheeled vehicles. Yeah. They say roadways and areas serving the establishment within its boundaries or the immediate vicinity should have half
medical system and medical knowledge, which is something we have touched on here.
Well, and I'd like to raise an issue related to that. I mean, because it's not just standardization as practice, it's also the ethos of standardization. I mean, because, Callum, in your talk, one thing that was really striking, very parallel to my work in Nepal, is that this push toward making rilpo, right, and buying rilpo, even Tibetan pills, even if it's not a global market that you're talking about, it's a Dharamsala or a Lhasa or an Ajuda-based idea of what medicine should be or should look like compared with powders that are made and ground locally, and there is this sensibility. There's a push and pull thing. Yes, we should be more standardized because somehow making pills is going to be better quality, but really we're not quite sure about that, and there's this tug about the value of standardization, and it leads to so many other things.
I think that the standardization is to meet the modern globalization of herbal market, even for national level in China. But we must recognize the inherent system of traditional medical systems still there. Besides the regular, we call it the formal medical, traditional medical knowledge system, we have the herbal medicines, we have the focal medicines. In the community, at the local level, there are the herbal doctor's practice, for which you cannot use the same standardization.
Exactly. Right.
Otherwise, there is no existence of the traditional community medical healers, herbal healers. Standard is the standard. Mm-hmm. That means in the local market, we see in China, still a lot of traditional local markets are there, hundreds of herbal medicine bring into the market. There's no standard, but people still buying. They're buying, everybody buying. You know, what is standard? They know the standard.
As long as it doesn't look like a radish.
Yeah, a lot of examples of alcoholism, very toxic, poisonous. 2 milligrams to cause the base, but people still eating. I tried 2 times. Each time I ate 2 bowls, this, like a big size like this, boiled and eat. But before that, I was very difficult to make the decision. But I have accepted the culture, you know?
The word standardization is a very broad term. A lot of people probably maybe have different definitions of that. Mm-hmm. You talk about standardizing to one particular chemical compound, and every time you reach a certain percentage of this one compound or a certain group of compounds. At the same time, let's say a traditional practitioner who is following pretty much the orthodox method that's been going on for hundreds of years, there can be another type of standardization.
Absolutely.
I use it, personally, I'm not a big believer in standardization in terms of the numbers. But my grandmother, when she would go out to her garden, she standardized which tomatoes she would pick.
Sure.
The ones that were the reddest, the smell, the shape, whatever. I mean, you know. In terms of my own private company, we standardize as much as we can. Once we establish what we consider the quality we're looking for, we standardize, our agricultural methods. Time to harvest, plant part being harvested. How is it dried? Is it dried quickly because it tends to oxidize or whatever? Do we dry it slowly because we want to cure it? How do we grind it? When we grind to a certain mesh. How do we do the extraction? We follow specific guidelines so that we're zeroing in as many variables as possible, so that our technique is as much as practically possible the same year after year, year after year, season after season. Now, of course, you have weather changes. You have a much wetter, unseasonably wet winter or maybe wet summer. The plants look a little bit different there, whatever. But I don't. As long as they fall within the range of what I consider, what my particular company has established as, that's what we'll use. We have had very, very rare in the 30 years we've been doing this, we have had an unseasonably super hot, droughty summer, where the plants did not look appropriate. We plowed them under. We took a loss and we plowed them under because they didn't meet our standard.
Right.
The your interests as a herbal business are quite different from the interests of traditional Asian practitioners, and that's kind of what we have to look at when we're looking at this question of standardization. And I think, the stakes are very different from a business perspective, as they are from a small-scale local practitioner's perspective. Not necessarily a local practitioner who's buying its products. We're talking about people who are collecting and making their own, and who are part of that tradition. And the relationship between your clients, for example, your business and your clients, is part of that matrix of factors that we're trying to get at right now. We have to try and avoid wanting to freeze in time any kind of traditions, because I'm always in danger of wanting to do that. This is the traditional medical system, and of course we have to look at the dynamism and the change. But it's the connection between the global business and the point at which we are in all these different locations that we've been looking at, in terms of how local knowledge and practice is going to continue to exist or not. Are reaching those, not sounding too dramatic. But,
well, it comes to education too. Where people are actually gaining access to knowledge, and how much time they're spending in different kinds of situations and different technologies, even about what is valuable
fit into the whole movement of what we call the sort of fragmentation and harmonization of international law. And some of the points raised here, I think, is that, for example, China has to standardize and certain quality control issues coming from its obligations that flow from WTO.
Right.
I think it's being a bit uncreative, like what you were saying.
Yeah.
It's not exactly about certain sort of actual rules and regulations that flow from it. It's just certain processes and
right.
certain values
right.
that are embedded in the WTO. But what they are, I think, is not fixed yet.
No.
And to think that it's actually fixed, I think it's being very uncreative. Okay, on one hand, you could talk about uncreative as being, okay, utopian, but no. Because creativeness comes from who has the power. Basically, that's essentially what it is all about. If you want to have the power in this case, I think, you can make a case for traditional medicine or traditional knowledge being a special case. Now that's when I guess we could talk about, you know, when he says, you don't have to need to have a high standard of something if you want to treat people. But of course, you know, you don't like, necessarily have to have the best products, etc. If you can make a special case out for traditional medicine, traditional knowledge, then you can sort of fit in those kind of arguments in there. And it would still fit into our obligations to WTO, WIPO, to any other World Health Organization, etc. And I can see where the transport models, etc., of the WTO regulations are going, because the way committees function there is to take a model law
yeah.
and then to modify it. I think that practice is really detrimental.
Yeah.
But the more we can make out, like, right, we understand the values principles, we want to use, but we also think this is how it fits into the social life, the cultural life, the economic life, the spiritual life of a particular community, then I think we can contribute more to the richness of WTO, richness of international law itself. So I'm talking about sort of, you know, vice versa, vice versa.
Lobbying and position papers.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. And I think that will help both ways and sort of you know, address many different issues.
I don't think it's even as easy as saying, okay, we've got a global market and we've got a local market.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what we did in our research, just on a very crude level, just on a species-by-species level, is we show there's very distinctive, you know, Tibetan medicines. What's practiced locally is one kind of Tibetan medicine. What's taught and practiced out of Lhasa
yeah.
is a whole nother one. And then there's the Tibetan medicine that's in the markets. And these are not international markets. These are local Lhasa markets and Kunming markets and so on. And the plants that are in all of those different places are distinct. It's a different medicine. And so trying to, you know, we really have to think of much more. I like your matrix, you know, kind of multidimensional definitions for this stuff.
I just must add that I mean China's done a great job actually in doing like exemptions for traditional medicines, all these county fairs and stuff. They are legal. It says in the laws, yeah, except for traditional Chinese medicine. The thing is that we have this very strong focus on like the Tibetan medical system here, and that's why many of my interventions come from that angle. And they don't have the lobbying. Not
yeah.
neither in India nor in China. They do have in Bhutan because it's basically a state. In the other context, they just sideline.
I was just wondering about the issue of accountability as a way to see through some of these complex processes. Because if you have a you know, accountability at a local level, you might have a situation where practice of arts things is seen at a collective level and something respectful and that needs to be done in a certain way, etc. Right through to somebody like me who uses patent medicines and I'm accountable to my register of Chinese level medicine.
lists, plant lists.
Yeah, plant lists and yeah, various other stuff. And you, obviously, you know, everything's been recorded, so we're going to try to somehow get that up on the ISM website. We're going to try to podcast for all now. So. Maybe it's going to be YouTube.
I still know.
Well, only 9 minutes on YouTube, or what is it?
Oh, yeah, you have to have